Welcome to the Hardball Times Audio, your weekly stop for baseball's biggest stories, past and present, with your hosts, Jen Macramus, Sarah Wexler, and Mary Craig. On this week's episode, we'll discuss Commissioner Manfred's extension, as well as MLB's new broadcast deal with Fox. We'll give our takes on the Marlins' new look. We'll try to unpack the racism and sexism accusations leveled against the Mariners. We'll talk about the lessened restrictions on player footwear. We'll ponder over just how much trouble the Dodgers are in, and we'll wrap up with another installment of This Week in Baseball History. On Thursday, it was reported that MLB owners unanimously approved a 5-year extension for Commissioner Rob Manfred, taking him through the year 2024. Manfred's biggest aims as commissioner, aside from making ownership money, have been to shorten the length of games and quicken pace of play. Has he been successful in doing these things?
I mean, largely no. Game times since he became commissioner have been fairly even across the years. I think there may be a couple of minutes shorter, but I don't think that's due to any of the initiatives Rob Manfred has imposed on the game. I think it's a difficult task to shorten baseball games when you don't want to do anything to cut down on commercial times. And so I think he's just, if this is actually his goal, he's been going about it the wrong way.
Yeah. As a viewer, I haven't noticed a huge discernible difference. As we've talked about on this podcast in the past, it always seemed like kind of the wrong place to be focusing because, you know, if we're cutting down the average game time by, what, maybe 15 minutes, that's not on its own going to convince people who aren't already interested in baseball to watch baseball. And you're not going to really lose people by having games go longer than, you know, they have in the past, unless the average like creeps up to like 5 hours, which it's hard to see something like that happening. Obviously if we keep adding, you know, things like replay review and, you know, who knows, but, that seems like an extreme possibility. Even if it were making a difference, it still seems like he's kind of barking up the wrong tree with what needs to be done to improve the game, and just putting so much focus into that seems like a misdirection of time and resources.
Yeah, I think the best way to tell whether or not he's been successful at shortening the length of game and quickening the pace of play is noting which World Series game is the one that people are still talking about from this past season. And it's not the one that's like super quick, ended under 3 hours, which I don't think was a thing. But the people, like, one that people are still talking about is the very, 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 very long, and now I'm forgetting the game number. Is it game 3 or 4 or 3?
It was game 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, no, he has not been successful, I don't think. I think baseball, like, I think that's one of the beauties in baseball, that, like, it's a slow-paced game that you could do something else while, you know, while watching it. That's why people do stuff like keep score. But I think that's the beauty in it, that, like, sometimes the slowness is the story itself, like, game 3 of the World Series, and, you know, he should just let baseball happen.
Yeah, I think a big part of why games are taking longer, in addition to all of the commercial breaks that they have put into games, is because the players are just so much more skilled than they were, you know, 50 to 100 years ago. You know, even the past 20 years, we've seen a huge leap in all around skill, and with that comes longer at bats, more battles, longer innings, and just more baseball overall.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it seems like the sort of thing where, you know, you'll take the good like that with the quote-unquote bad, which is longer games, and, you know, yeah, I guess you can make efforts to, you know, combat some of the issues that extend the length of games. But again, it's like, there's only so much you can do about it. And it just, it seems like a strange thing to try and like, or to basically like establish this early on is your legacy. It's at least, you know, for now, it seems like the thing that we're going to associate most with Rob Manfred. And I mean, there are worse things, but it's a strange choice.
So what do we think MLB will look like under Manfred for the next 5 seasons?
I think it'll look largely the same. We might see an expansion team or two in this time, because in addition to shortening game lengths, he seems committed to growing the game internationally, having games played in different countries, like Mexico and then London with the Red Sox and the Yankees next season. So we might see a couple of teams join the league, like one in each league, or try and even it up. But I don't know if that is fully feasible in the next 5 seasons. So I think we'll largely kind of see things go along at the same rate that they've been going under Manfred so far.
Yeah, agreed. 5 seasons is not a hugely long time. I mean, obviously, one season can age us tremendously, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not that long to actually implement much change. But I do think that Mary's right that, you know, we will see an increased push in international relevance for baseball. We've begun to see that, and it's, I think that's a good thing. I think that's, you know, obviously the reasons for it, from MLB's perspective, are different from the reasons why, you know, viewers like us think it's a good thing. You know, having the game go internationally is good because it means more money, but also there's something to be said for, you know, baseball, you know, a game where its championship is called the World Series, to like actually have more world involvement. And I think that's, if that's something that they can actually do effectively, then I think that's something that makes the game better. So that's something I would like to see more of, and hope we do see more of under Manfred.
Yeah, I think he's been doing really well on the international front, you know, even though that's probably not like the greatest reasons behind it, because capitalism and everything, but you know, it's still more than Bud Selig did. And I think that's one of the more important things. I don't think that he's going to stop the whole pace of play, length of game thing, but I just feel like MLB will probably look a little bit more international under Manfred's time.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's it might not have great motivations, but hopefully it has good end results, and hopefully we'll see more of a concern for different international styles of play and less of an emphasis on the you know, quote unquote American way of baseball being the best form of the game. So I would like for this to end in a lot of diversification, not only in fans and players, but in styles of play as well. And I think we've already started to see a little bit of that seep into baseball. So, related to the Manfred extension is MLB's new broadcast deal with Fox, covering the 2022 through 2028 seasons. The deal is reportedly worth $5.1 billion, which is a 36% increase over the percent increase over the current deal, resulting in an average of $25 million per team annually. The deal will see the World Series, All-Star Game, and half of all playoff games broadcast on Fox, with additional resources devoted to streaming and broadcasting more regular season games on the network. In our view, what does this deal mean for the future of watching baseball?
A whole lot more Joe Buck. which, you know, take that how you want. I don't love actively disparaging broadcasters, but you know, he's a guy that people have opinions on. But in all seriousness, you know, I feel like so many big games are already on Fox as it is. I mean, they already have the All-Star game. They already have the World Series. They already have a lot of playoff games. So in that regard, not a ton changes for the average fan. I think the idea of having more regular season games just on a network that anyone can watch is a good idea. You know, not everybody has cable. Not everyone has the channel that the team plays on. Cough, Dodgers, Sportsnet LA, cough, cough. So, you know, if we can make it more accessible to people, if we can, you know, just have it available on regular broadcast TV more often as a game, I think that is a good thing. Even if it, you know, is done for the sake of lining the pockets of ownership. I'm curious to see what additional resources devoted to streaming means, because that's obviously been a big issue on MLB's end. You know, being able to let people watch games and being able to have MLB TV function and, you know, the whole blackout issues. I wonder how this plays into that. Because, you know, obviously if you, in the past, like if a game is on Fox in your area and you have MLB TV, you can't watch it on MLB TV. So, yeah, I'm curious to see exactly what that means.
Yeah, it's, I always like the fact that, like, Fox at least had a decent amount of the playoff games. Like, one CS would be, like, on a cable channel, and then the other would be on Fox, but, you know, it's moved to FS1 recently, and it's like, well, then what's the point? Like, if you don't have that narrative, like, accessible on a network channel, then okay, whatever. Like, you're just cutting off a lot of people from baseball. But I just feel like even though Fox, the network itself, like the whole conglomerate, will probably see a lot of baseball. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be put on the network itself. And I think that's my greatest worry with it, that it's not going to be as accessible as it once used to be.
I think accessibility, as we've seen, is going to be one of the largest issues for MLB in the coming years. Hopefully this helps with that and makes it easier for people to watch games online. But obviously, as you were saying, the blackout issue is kind of a huge hurdle that they'll have to go through. I don't know how that will factor into this, but hopefully they address it and make it less of a prominent feature in trying to stream baseball games. I hope this deal also comes along with the end of John Smoltz in the broadcast booth. Hopefully, please, it won't even take until 2022 to get him out of there, because I don't think hearing his voice more and being more able to listen to him play playoff games is going to help grow the game at all.
You mean you don't like hearing the game actively disparaged?
Weird, I know.
It's like John Smoltz doesn't even like baseball.
Well, he likes baseball, just, you know, the way that was played in his day, not the way these youngins are doing it.
It's totally.
Ramble,
it's
rabble, wrong. Get off my lawn.
It's very old man yells at cloud.
Which is what you want to hear, you know, when you're seeing something, you just want to hear somebody tell you over and over again that it's actually terrible.
Of course. Well, speaking of new, young, and exciting things, the Marlins unveiled new logos and uniforms for the upcoming season, stripping down their colors to predominantly blue, pink, and black. What do we think of these new uniforms?
I love the shade of blue that they went with. That is one of my favorite colors, so I applaud them for that. I'm a bit disappointed overall. They're kind of plain, and they really stripped back all of the color that was previously in the logo that I think made them stand out. So I think that they really kind of missed the mark, and they had a lot of opportunity to do something completely different with the uniforms to make the Marlins stand out more, and to make it very representative of Miami, and I don't think they did that.
I actually think the opposite. I think they captured Miami pretty well. The one thing that I'm thinking about the most is looking at the colors and looking at the way that they have a color font on a black background, and like the way that the Marlin looks, just kind of like that outline. It just reminds me of a lot of the neon signs in Miami. So it just reminds me so much of like, it's not necessarily like the stereotype of like, oh, Miami is very colorful, but the thing is, at night, when the sun goes down, like you see a bunch of neon signs go out, and it's kind of like the remnants of the Neon Museum from Las Vegas, but actually still in action. So it just reminds me a lot of what Miami looks like at night. It's kind of subtle, but not necessarily like jumping out at you like, here's a bunch of color, we're going to overwhelm you, and you're not going to know what our primary color is. So I think it's a really good move on their part. I just don't know if I like the sans serif font of Miami, like the alternate Miami, like the M on the hats is great, although it reminds me of like the Fort Myers Miracle logo in minor league baseball, and also the High Desert Mavericks, rest in peace. But the Miami logo, like I get why they went with the kind of the curvature in the font because it is very neon sign-like. It just, I don't know if it works for a baseball logo, but I think the colors in itself lend itself to that Miami nightlife scene.
I get what you're saying, but I think I still kind of wish that they were slightly more vibrant. Like it doesn't have to be like neon pink, but like it's kind of like a color where it's somewhere between red and pink, and that's just a little too subtle for my liking. Like I feel like it could have really popped if it had been like a slightly more pink. But overall, I like it. I think it's an upgrade from what they had before. I thought that was just way too busy and all over the place. And I think this is a step in the right direction, certainly. It'll be interesting to see how it looks against the green of Marlins Park, but that's a whole other story. And as for the logo, the M, I thought what was interesting about that is it's similar to the logo of the Havana Sugar Kings, which is kind of a cool tribute to history. And also, I guess, was the logo of the original Miami Marlins. That I think that is cool. The questions about font choices aside, I think the tribute to history, I think that's always a good thing to do. Like if so much of the rebranding is about Miami and about paying tribute to Miami and, the culture of the city, I think that's a really good way to accomplish that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just wish I don't like the black uniforms at all. I think the font, the names are far, far too difficult to read, or at least that's what it seemed like. Maybe it's different in person, but that's what it seemed like on the images that we got from those. So I wish they had done something, maybe made the letters and numbers a solid color as opposed to just an outline. I don't know if that would have been better, but I'm not a fan of that at all.
Yeah, I agree that it should have been a little bit more of a vibrant red or pink, but I think that's awesome about the M and paying tribute to like the baseball history down there. I think I'm just wondering how it's going to look on road uniforms because I don't know if that the way that the colors are right now will stand out on the road grays. So we'll
Yeah.
see.
Yeah. Something I always got to take into consideration, and it's a good question.
Yeah, it's weird that we haven't seen the road grays yet.
Yeah, I feel like typically when there's a new uniform unveiling, they show them all at once, but I don't
Maybe they
know.
just looked bad and they were like, we'll save those for later. Nobody's going to be watching anyway.
Yeah, they'll just roll out to their first road game in them, and that'll be the end of it.
It's weird though, because it's like, well, like more people would see them on the road.
Sure.
It's true. Oh, well. So the team's new look is part of a bigger rebranding process that also includes upgrades to the ballpark and, according to team chairman and owner Bruce Sherman, a push to attract the local community, especially millennials, to the ballpark. Are these the steps needed to accomplish that?
No.
It's just a weird. So you take out the sculpture and then you put in those like three decks of like hangout social area, but like what millennial is gonna be like, I want to be social with my friends, let's go hang out at a ballpark, but not for the game, just to hang out. Like, that's weird to me. I don't know if that will be a thing for millennials. And then, like, what they're gonna hang out, and they're gonna be like, oh, actually, now I love baseball, and they're gonna buy season tickets or whatever. Like, the thought process just is not there for me on that one. I appreciate them trying to reach out to millennials, whatever, but I don't think this is the correct way to do it.
It's not the best way to do anything. I don't think they're going to increase like millennial, not just viewership, but like patronage. It's not the best way to go about anything. And I think if they want to appeal to millennials more, like affordable tickets, affordable concessions, affordable ways to get there are like the easiest thing to get people in there because, as we all know, millennials will never be able to afford buying a house and everything because we spend it all on avocado toast. But no, I'm not suggesting that the Marlins add avocado toast to the menu. But
Honestly, go for it. I would love having avocado toast as an option at a ballpark. I'm saying it. Avocado toast. I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm a
for the
fan.
ticket and the price of the toast, that would be astronomical.
But not if they make it affordable, like Jen was saying. It's like they could really be revolutionary by offering affordable avocado toast as a concession option at their ballpark.
Yeah,
And if they
have
have a
like.
gluten-free option too, then you're golden.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. Listen to this, Marlins. But I think also, like in the whole grand scheme of things, like there's one way to do marketing toward millennials, right and wrong, and like obviously the wrong thing is, the Montgomery Biscuits millennial night. That's extremely, extremely wrong. But they just need to actually maybe talk to the millennials in the area and be like, hey, what will get you to come out to the game more? And it's very simple. Just like maybe go to University of Miami and like talk to people. Go to the community colleges, talk to people. Survey people in a certain demographic and just be like, hey, what would we have to do to get you to Marlins Park? It's simple. Sometimes, like, if they're trying to get back into the local community, maybe talk to the community and actually hear what they have to say rather than going to like consultants and brand ambassadors and be like, oh, this is what they need, and not actually talk to the people who literally live there.
But like
Yeah.
older white dudes definitely know what millennials want more than millennials know, so I don't know.
I mean, the concept of talking to people that you want to have at your park to, find out what would get them there, that may be a step in the right direction. But you know what I think is really what they can do to attract the community, including millennials? I think they can provide a winning team. Perhaps, like actually, like put together a team that can, do better than, what a 50-win season or whatever. I don't know where they actually finished this year, but it wasn't good. It's like, no, the quickest way to get people to the ballpark and to get them interested and invested in your team is to give them a team that's actually worth watching. It's, I know that they're in a rebuilding process, and I know that's a thing that's slow and that takes time. But it's the number one thing that you need to do. And if, all this other stuff, it's the increases that they're going to get from it. It's incremental at best. And you're really not going to see a huge increase in attendance until you actually give people something worth coming to the ballpark to see. And it's maybe that's something that we'll see in like 5 years, but I don't know, they could find a way to accelerate that process and not just kind of, cheap out and dilly-dally around. Think that would be a whole lot more effective because, trying to get people to rally around a team that's gonna finish in fifth place, that is a losing game, just like, the Marlins are going to do a lot for the next several seasons if this the approach continues the way it is.
RIP.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, any Marlins fans listening to this. But I'm not saying anything you don't already know. But yeah, I think the aim of getting millennials to be invested in baseball is admirable, but there's a surefire way to do that, and it's not making changes to the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, contrary to what people want to say about Marlins or about other teams that are in rebuilds, there is no reason, absolutely no reason, that they could not and should not try to sign Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, either both or one or the other. Like, imagine one or both of those players playing for the Marlins, playing in Miami. That would be incredible. I think they have, I mean, Machado is from Florida, so he's got that hometown thing going on that I think would be really great. People would respond to it. It would be great for marketing. And Bryce Harper as well, he's got the personality for that. So I think that would be something that they could immediately do, but they won't because they like to cry broke.
And let's not forget, they just literally traded Giancarlo Stanton and Christian Yelich last offseason. And hey, look where Christian Yelich is now. Anyway, the Marlins. Just hope they don't become the Mets because that's very sad in one division. Oh God, they're all in one division.
The NL East, baby.
Oh, nothing but winners.
So earlier this week, the Mariners' former director of high performance, Dr. Lorne Martin, accused several of the organization's higher-ups of both racism and sexism, including GM Jerry DePoto, manager Scott Servais, and director of player development Andy McKay. According to Dr. Martin, the accused have made derogatory comments about Latin American players and Latino players, calling them lazy, dumb, and stupid. And I think she made a point to directly say that it was mostly about Dominican players. She also stated that DePoto referred to her as a quote, cocky Latina, and detailed an exchange in which Servais told her she should not be at certain meetings, quote, because she's a woman. The Mariners have vehemently denied Dr. Martin's accusations. An internal investigation concluded by the team found nothing to back Martin's claims. The matter remains to be investigated by Major League Baseball. So, what do we make of this situation?
It is a mess. There's so many things going on here. I want to say that I think that everything that Dr. Martin said is totally believable. It's not about the people she specifically implicated, but it's about general attitudes throughout Major League Baseball. I think there's no reason to think that someone in a position in these sorts of positions couldn't think like that and couldn't have said these sorts of things. There's legitimate reasons to be skeptical about what Martin said, and there's not legitimate reasons. Obviously I understand people being skeptical because, she came out when she'd already lost the job and didn't have much to lose. But that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It could have been that she waited to say anything because, she was concerned for herself. Like, if she was particularly the recipient of derogatory comments herself, that is a hostile work environment, and there are concerns for her own safety there. There's also the fact that by coming out and saying this, she has basically made herself unhirable in baseball. So it seems like that you don't go about and burn those bridges if you're not really serious about it, and it's more than just a matter of revenge for you. We'll see if MLB's investigation turns anything up. Whether or not it does doesn't necessarily mean anything. I know that I don't put a whole lot of stock in the Mariners investigation because, yeah, why would they, what good would possibly come out of implicating themselves in that? Like, it's, there would have been nothing to gain from that. So, yeah, everything about this situation is really kind of unpleasant. You know, none of us were there, so none of us can say for sure what happened. But I think that there are plenty of reasons to think that it's a plausible thing to happen.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Again, I don't take much stock in Major League Baseball's investigation of this. Certainly not the Mariners' investigation, which is just completely laughable. You know, when that report dropped, it was a Friday night. I legitimately laughed out loud when I saw it because it's just so perfectly insidious and ridiculous that they would do that. And I think that even if these claims are false, I don't know that you can definitively prove that they're false unless Dr. Martin comes out and says that she fabricated all of these things. I don't think that we'll ever fully know what went on here. But I think Major League Baseball nonetheless and the Mariners nonetheless need to figure out and address why these claims are so believable. And they need to address the fact that Major League Baseball has had such a storied history of racism embedded in each of the teams and in Major League Baseball as an organization. And I think there needs to be a lot more concerted effort to address that, to atone for that in the past and present, and to ensure that it gets weeded out of the game in the future.
Yeah, there's also something to be said for the Mariners, noting that they are making they're going to like have to consider the culture of the I should find the exact quote. There was something about how they're going to have to make shifts to the team's culture, and it's like, okay, well, that's interesting timing. I mean, not that we all don't have room for improvement, but it's like, okay, so no one in you're claiming no one in your organization has ever said anything racist ever, basically, but there's still a need for a culture shift. Like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. And there were, I saw several people trying to disprove these claims by pointing to the prominent number of Latinos, specifically Dominican players on the Mariners roster, and saying that these are some of the star players on the team. So why would the Mariners possibly speak about them in this way? And I think people just really need to understand that that's not how racism works. You can have, you can be racist even if you have family members or have friends who are the race about which you are being racist. That just gives people cover so that they can come out and parade these people around and say, oh, no, like I couldn't possibly be racist. Racism goes deeper than that, and people need to understand that about it.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, we've got ourselves another update in the saga that is players' rights to footwear choices. MLB and its team owners this week chose to relax restrictions on the cleats that players are allowed to wear. Interesting timing. Per the joint release from MLB and the MLBPA, quote, players may wear shoes displaying any of the following colors in any proportion: black, white, and gray, any colors displayed on the player's uniform and certain variations thereof, and any additional colors designated by the player's club. Shoe designs must still be pre-approved by teams. So is this a compromise, or is it a stepping stone to greater allowances in player expression?
It's a compromise, for sure. I guess that doesn't mean it's not it can't be a stepping stone to something more. Like, if you know, this is a thing that for some reason has been a really contentious issue And, you know, I guess it's because it's a matter of control and it's a matter of limiting what players can do to express themselves. So I guess the fact that, you know, we finally made some headway there shows that, hey, maybe if you can get this for yourselves, you know, maybe we can start to break down other kind of oppressive standards about how you can express yourself in the game. And I guess shoes specifically are such a hot button issue because for so many people, shoes are a big part of personal expression. So I think that it's definitely a compromise because there's still obviously restrictions on this, but it's obviously something that mattered to players. So the fact that they were able to finally get some actual freedom here, I think that if you're a player, that makes you hopeful that you can make other changes going forward. But, you know, hopefully it doesn't take as long as this did to hammer out, because it feels like this is something that's been dragging on for a really long time.
Like, I'm glad that the MLBPA is listening to the players, because this is a concern, because, you know, MLB has been pretty restrictive on how players express themselves. That being said, I don't understand why MLB, it's like they're choosing this hill to die on, and I don't understand it. I just don't. It is absolutely a compromise, because, like, sure, let's try to see MLB actually, like, give in to the PA's demands on this. I just feel like the MLBPA needs to be a little bit stronger in its approach for bigger changes to happen. And while, yes, this is a good start, I feel like there's still more that can be done and isn't, at least for the time being explored.
Yeah, I agree with that. It seems like MLB is fully at liberty, has full control of the situation, to just kind of hand out these little breadcrumbs to the MLBPA and say, see, we're listening to you. Look, we gave you, you know, 2% more freedom with your shoes than otherwise would have been the case. So MLBPA needs to push back and should not accept this and just wait it out until the next bargaining session, because there are a lot of big labor issues that MLBPA should be pushing back against MLB for. As nice as it is or will be to see you know, a few more colors and a few more freedoms in relation to player shoes, this is not something that MLBPA should be satisfied with. And I have another question. I didn't fully read this, but I saw that there would be one weekend where players could wear whatever shoes they wanted. And I was just thinking, like, how, like, perfectly MLB-esque it would be if that was players' weekend. And they were like, well, we gave you a weekend. We didn't say which one.
Yeah.
Well, while we wait for the hot stove to provide us with something more exciting than Steve Pierce signing a 1-year contract with the Red Sox and Jeff Mathis very signing exciting a 2-year deal. Okay, Mary. He had a good postseason. We get it. Anyway, and Jeff Mathis signing a 2-year deal with the Rangers, the interesting developments continue to be in team personnel news. Among other things, the Red Sox extended manager Alex Cora through the 2021 season. The Orioles filled their GM vacancy by hiring Astros AGM Mike Elias, who is now the highest paid GM in the game, and you can understand why you would need a lot of money to be willing to take that gig. And the bleeding continues for the Dodgers, who lost a couple of coaches and, worse for them, their director of research and development, Doug Fearing. With all these fairly high-profile losses, we kind of have to start wondering, are the Dodgers in trouble?
Yes. Yes, they are. It seems like they're going to continue to hemorrhage players, personnel, and I guess we have to think about whether or how much this is tied to the investigation of the organization. And I don't see right now any situation in which the Dodgers come out of this looking anything other than terrible.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a lot going on there, and it's obviously not going to be the last, and it obviously hasn't been the first, and I just think there's going to be a slow trickle out of news with the Dodgers. And, like, even though the ones who are leaving might not be directly involved in the investigation, I don't think they are. I think this is, like, you know, back during, you know, before Zaidi was the GM. I just think that the bleeding's not going to stop anytime soon, at least.
Yeah, it's, the timing is definitely interesting, and it definitely feels like there's been a greater turnover in personnel than there usually is in most off seasons. And on the one hand, it's like, yeah, when you have a good team, people are going to be interested in the players involved in making that happen, in this sense, meaning, you know, the front office personnel and coaches, not the actual players. So, you know, you can see that being part of it, but also, you know, whether or not anything actually comes of the DOJ investigation, you could understand why some people might not want us to crown to be part of it when it happens, whatever that happens to be. Whether it's, again, whether it's actually related or not, that's just speculation at this point, but it's hard not to notice the timing, to be sure. And it's, yeah, just like I said, so many more people leaving than usually seems to be the case, and people leaving of their own volition, not, you know, being let go or anything like that. But the good news for the Dodgers is that I hear Condoleezza Rice is available. that's a thing.
Hey, I mean, you know, W is just painting dogs at his ranch, and he does have that baseball experience.
Oh, God.
They know they're around bombs, so, and then a home run friendly MLB that we have right now could be effective.
And he's not a stranger to controversy.
This is true.
Especially not by the DOJ.
God. Anyone brings up Dick Cheney and I'm leaving. I'm just getting up and walking away.
No, he would just shoot everyone in the face, let's be real.
That's true.
And with that, this week in baseball history, which I'm sure this has already been one of the weird longest weeks in baseball history, but we're throwing it way back to 1890, November 22nd. The American Association shakes things up, expelling the Philadelphia Athletics for violating the league's constitution, and then offering franchises to Boston, Chicago, and Washington.
Fast forwarding to November 18th, 1949, Jackie Robinson becomes the first black player to win the MVP award, beating out Stan Musial, Ralph Kiner, and Pee Wee Reese.
On November 18th, 1966, Sandy Koufax retires at age of 30 and seemingly at the height of his career, coming off his third Cy Young Award winning season. He would be voted into the Hall of Fame in 1972 as a first balloter, and his induction at age 36 made him the youngest player ever to receive that honor.
And now in this millennium, November 20th, 2001, Ichiro Suzuki wins both Rookie of the Year and MVP, becoming only the second player to do so following the Red Sox's Fred Lynn in 1975.
And finally, on November 24th, 2015, Yogi Berra and Willie Mays received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, becoming the 10th and 11th baseball players to be awarded the honor. And as we know, Babe Ruth will become the 12th.
But what we don't know about him, apparently, is that he was a pitcher.
Wow.
People
no
don't know
way.
That.
I had no idea.
It only takes a adept baseball fan to pull that one out.
So that's why they compare Ohtani to Babe Ruth.
Now it makes sense. Biting political commentary for us this week.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Hardball Times audio. You can find the Hardball Times at fangraphs.com/THT and on Twitter at @hardball_times. I can be found on Twitter at Jen Mac Ramos. You can find Sarah at SarahWexler32. You can find Mary at Mary M. Craig. You can find the podcast on Twitter at THT Audio. Thanks to our theme music from bensound.com. You can find all the episodes of the Hardball Times audio on iTunes. Please rate and subscribe. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode.